Blog Talk Radio.
Howdy, race fans. How the hell are you? Steve Billmeyer here. I'm going to ramrod this cattle drive we call Racing with Big Sweat. Glad to have you with us tonight. Hope you enjoy tonight's show. We got a couple of good guys coming on tonight. Sprint car driver and a dirt street stock driver. So we're going to talk some dirt tonight. Let me say hello to my producer, the man that makes all this possible, man pushing the buttons behind that curtain, Mr. CJ Sports. How's it going tonight, CJ?
It's going. Glad to be here. Glad we're on the air tonight. We didn't have shows earlier this week due to technical difficulties and finances, but we're back tonight here on the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network, so just very excited to be back and very excited to hear from your guests tonight.
Good deal, good deal. Yep, it's going to be a good show. You're a North Carolinian like I am. Been pretty damn hot down here in the last couple of days, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah. It's supposed to be worse this weekend.
Yeah, I
hot
know.
In North Carolina. Y'all got to be kidding me. Have you not seen the weather forecast for Mississippi? The devil lives here.
Folks, this ain't the weatherman talking to you. This is my co-host, Chris Creighton. Glad to hear you're aboard, Chris.
Yes, sir. Glad to be here and glad to be on the air. And Jason, good to hear from you, bud. Glad to see you back on go.
Yes, sir. Glad to be here.
What a week of racing, Steve. My gosh, did you watch that dirt track race yesterday?
Oh, absolutely. I had to watch it.
It was a crown jewel, was it not?
Absolutely. It's pretty interesting to me to watch them because they kind of lumber around the track. There's no sensation of speed there at all like you get with...
No, right.
Something like you can tell they're moving, but last night, you know, they're just kind of plodding along like a pack of elephants. But you got guys with a lot of dirt background and everything in those trucks and a lot of good truck drivers, so it is a good show. It's definitely different.
And I agree on both ends of that, and I think we got to see the example of what you're talking about with the Bobby Pierce situation. Unfortunately, he had a blowed out tire and he was stuck in fourth gear, so he couldn't put it in reverse. And when the paramedics walked over there to ask him to get out of the car, he kind of looked at him like, what do you mean get out of the car? I barely tapped the wall. So we have these drivers, boy, they tear the wall down sometimes and they don't get in an ambulance. And Bobby Pierce got a little taste of what it was to be a NASCAR superstar. Even if they are going 60 miles an hour, NASCAR has certain rules and you got to abide by them. And you know, it just showed the young man's respect for the sport, though, because he didn't argue him or nothing like that. Kenny Wallace was probably sitting up there stirring more stuff up than Bobby was, but he got on in there and you know, had he not had problems, I think we'd had a different outcome in the race last night. But Kyle Larson put on a great show for the fans.
He smoked them like a Marlboro. He did a real good show.
There's only a few drivers I know, Steve, that can come from the rear, start near the front, go to the rear, and work themselves back up. And we all know one of them was named Dale Earnhardt. And I'm not going to compare Larson to Earnhardt, but it takes a very level-headed driver that knows he has a fast car to get put to the rear and then to work his way magnificently back to the front. With it wasn't aggressive driving or anything like that. He wasn't pushing people out of the way. He worked it like a chessboard.
Yep. And while we're on the subject, we got our first drivers in the studio with us now, folks. If you're just tuning in, this young man is a standout in South Carolina, a giant Clemson fan, by the way. But let's say hello and talk a little bit with Mr. Harley Holden. Harley, how you doing tonight?
Hey, man, doing really, really good, Steve. It's good to be here. Good to be on the show, Chris. Good to see you, man. Good to hear from you.
Sure.
Good to be on the show, guys.
Glad to have you on. While we got a second, give us a shout out from where you're at.
Oh, man, I'm going to tell you right now, I am standing by a grill with a little charcoal rolling, some pork chops going on it in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Not going to lie to you.
That's what I'm talking about. Myrtle Beach, he said a beach, Steve.
Yeah, I know. I'm chilling right now. Got some jalapeno cheddar bratwurst going in a little pool of beer and onions and a cold one in my hand. And some pork chops on the grill. So I might have just made y'all hungry, but good to be with you. Got some shrimp skewers going too, fellas.
Oh, man. Send those to Mississippi.
I heard that.
Well, it's been good talking to you, Harley, and I'll see you in about 3 hours.
Great
Holler,
show tonight, guys.
Good.
Great show. We'll wrap this up. Steve, you bringing the bud? You got the helicopter on the way to pick me up?
Yep, and I've raised many a night in Myrtle Way, so I know exactly how to get there and how long it takes me.
That's right.
Goodness
that's right.
Gracious.
Little asphalt track down here. That's a popular track from what I understand. I got a bunch of friends up around home. Now, I'm a dirt driver, but I got a bunch of asphalt friends that's local to me. And then Myrtle Beach seems to be the location for traveling at the end of the year. A lot of fun racing going on down here.
Back
yeah,
you're kind
of in the
late,
Epic Center. Right.
Back
ahead,
when
sir.
I was a late model owner, we'd go down there the weekend before Thanksgiving. Is there a big race? And there'd be 120 cars there trying to get in. And, I mean, it was a show. I took...
That's some good racing.
It is. It's a good show. It really is. So you've been on kind of a little odyssey here, I've seen, for the past couple of weeks. Let's talk about that. What happened, two weeks ago.
The majority of this year, I really have struggled the majority of this year. And a really good car, leading races, slip up at the end of the race, run second, or just, you know, something happened. Well, 2 weeks ago, I'm leading the race again, and it's just a really dry track. It had rubbered up, but I just couldn't get my car to get down into it. I was getting a little pressure from second place, and I went a little hot and into turn three, put the car in there, and man, if I didn't spin out and leading the race in front of the entire field, left me pointing backwards on the front straightaway, and guys just, you know, that's the worst feeling ever. Guys don't have nowhere to go. I didn't blame nobody, but man, I took a hit straight to the right front, bent the car really bad. Honestly, I really thought things was kind of done for the year. I mean, it had been that bad. But my guys at the shop, you know, they were determined. We put the thing on a frame machine. My brother went to work on it. And, man, he pulled that thing back, and you'd never know it was bent. I went to work on the suspension, changed a lot of stuff. And I'm going to tell you, the guys got my car better than it was for the entire first of the year. We went back out, and, you know, they just really, I mean, they hit on something. I think they caught a couple things with the car that, you know, I didn't really know we were missing. And, you know, it's one of those deals where we thoroughly check the car, and, man, they dialed that thing back in. And we come back out there this week, and I'm telling you, we laid the hammer down. There was one, you know, before a caution came out, there was two cautions during the race, I believe there was. The second caution before it came out, man, I had five or six car lengths on the guy. I mean, we were strolling. So, you know, you never know. I'll be honest. So 2 weeks ago, I was down and out. I was disappointed. But the boys just really showed up and showed out when they come to work in the shop. So shout out to my boys and you know, everything that they done on the car. It's just, man, it is something else now.
That's pretty top-notch, isn't it, Chris? Home
yeah,
the
it is.
Hardware.
I want to know more about this frame machine. I want to know what techniques they use to pull a frame out like that. I mean, can you explain that for us, Harley?
I can. What they done, and it's actually a little shout-out to my boys right here, the local body shop, Walden's Body Shop. He's got a frame machine, and it's just your standard body shop frame machine. But what happened was when I took the hard lick to the right front, it just bent the strut tower. It bent the entire right front up. But it moved it basically about 6 inches. And that's kind of devastating to a car like mine. But what they done, it was chains off the right rear and a chain down to the left rear. We blocked up the right front, and then he just literally put the frame machine on it and with the hydraulics and just hooked to the strut tower and pulled the thing back down. And he just literally pulled the whole car was buckling. I didn't know if we was going to stretch the car into or not. But, it come right back to where you couldn't even tell what I done. And the car's spider-coated, the chassis spider-coated. So what I done is went ahead and checked all the spots that had cracked, and I made sure all the welds were tight and redone. And then we, touched up everything. I did refab a new front bumper because we just run a tubing bumper on just same as most dirt cars. And and we got the thing back together. The body work, yeah, it's a little wrinkled, but we got in there and we pulled it back out. And we really got it actually pretty straight. And
so you gave the car a little character.
You gave the car a little character, and a lot of guys told me, said, "Hey, it's time to go racing now." You know,
that's it.
Shoe Shine Show is over.
That's right. You can point to that damage right there, and you say, "Hey, I remember that night. I got away with that one."
That's right. So yeah, snuck away with one there a little, but it was. It was surprising because it was a hell of a hit. I actually very thankful to have the equipment I got. I do run a Hans device, obviously 5-point harness and a Hans device and a full containment seat, and all
good
of it
people.
Come into play. Every bit of it come into play.
Yeah.
I didn't, the hit was so hard from the front side that the fuel cell, which was in the back of the car, which it, took nothing but the actual lick. Because the hit was from the front, it actually moved the fuel cell 2 inches forward. So that was when
wow.
I knew I had taken a hell of a hit. To move a fuel cell which was strapped down and did not take the hit, it just
right.
shifted.
Was this
was
on
a
bank track? I mean, what did you do? Just kind of roll it around and just Maytag it and you were sitting out in the front or what?
Yeah,
so
I did. I was leading the race coming off turn four. It was Toccoa, Georgia. It's a really high bank. Little, about a 5/16, really small, high banked dirt track. And, really high banked. I guess the banking would be equivalent to something like Phoenix City, I would say.
Yeah.
So,
make you feel like a fog in a blender running that.
Do what now?
I said it makes you feel like a frog in a blender when you run that.
Oh, man. I'm telling you, it is something. You really, I've had people come down there to that track for the first time.
Frog in a blender. It took me a minute, Steve. A frog in a blender. That's a bad
Crystal,
situation
I don't know about
there.
This.
if you're the frog and you're seeing them blades, I guess, in a way, I can kind of visualize that, Steve. Good analogy. Wow.
That is
frog
good. That is good. Yeah. Yeah. It's a little bull ring. I've had people come down there and they're like, "Man, you can't pass on this track." And I'm like, "Okay, keep believing that." Because you can. You just have to have it, if you're going to hang it out on the outside with a good tacky track, you just got to have the balls put it up there.
That's it. That's
there
right.
You.
And keep it there.
One of the, everybody knows Jonathan Davenport with the World of Outlaw Late Models. He's actually from just up the road from Toccoa in Blairsville, Georgia. Jonathan said for years Toccoa Speedway is one of his favorite tracks. And not that he runs there a lot because he's obviously with the series, but he said for years that my local track right there at Toccoa Speedway was one of his favorite tracks. And, high bank, small, and very racy. So it's something for the fans to check out if they haven't ever checked that place out. It's a lot of fun.
What's the street stock count over there, and what rules are y'all running?
Well, actually, I'm running a stock four, so I'm in the four cylinder class, but stock four, and I run with the series of monster minis, they call them, and it's just kind of one of these that's the sanctioning rules I run under, basically.
Right, right.
And but yeah, I mean the count. Oh man, we average about 15. On a good night, we may get on up towards 20. But I mean, there's a good field of cars every week. Very good field of cars.
Right. I do believe Steve, if my memory serves correct, we had him on the show last year.
Right around the
end of the season, didn't we?
That's right.
Yes, we did. Yes, we did.
Yep, I was. You did have me on. Last year, it was one of those show-out kind of years. I won 14 races last year. And I'm at five. So, and I'm not down on that. I mean, I'm happy with five because the season's not over. But, man, let me tell you, 14 races in a season for winning.
Yeah.
I won the points championship, just took it all. So, man,
all right,
it was really good last year.
Did you feel like you had a bullseye?
It lasts long there with them, doesn't it?
Do what now?
I said it really makes you feel like you belong there with all the other ones that are that good.
Oh, man, I'm telling you. That was an unreal year last year, so I've tried not to keep my expectations this year up to that. Although you can't help it, but just a little, you really want to try to get back to that if you can. But yeah, it really did. It makes you feel good. It makes you feel like, you really accomplished something. I've been racing now since I was, just a kid. I'm 35 now, still racing, still got kids of my own, hopefully to start those someday soon. But yeah, running a race shop. I actually do run a little race shop right there in the town of Central, right next to Clemson. And if you don't know Clemson, just think about the national championship game that happened this past year.
Yeah, I think Alabama shop. Won that one.
You didn't have to put that shot in there.
Roll Tide.
Oh, you didn't have to put that. I knew you was going to put that shot in there.
I kind of didn't want to say anything because I have this thing about talking about football during racing season. But, you had to say, Clemson. How's that quarterback of y'all? Has he transferred to Alabama yet?
Oh, no. Y'all going to get the team again.
He's going to put on a good game for y'all. I think we play y'all in the season this year, don't we?
No, you don't. We are probably going to hopefully meet up in the playoffs again. But, yeah, we don't have Alabama regular season. We got Auburn, but we're going to start the season off with Auburn, which, we'll put a beat down on them for you. That way you don't have to worry about them when you get there.
Yeah, they're scared across 50-yard line over there. Oh, the Gus Bus ain't doing too well.
Yeah, no, they're not excelling this year. But
I tell you what, y'all's coach is a really good he's a smart-minded coach, and guys like that go a long way in college football. It's the same reason why people like Steve were crew chiefs for a long time. They really know how to work with the players, and they know how to Steve being a long-time crew chief. He had that job, one, because of the knowledge that he had of the cars. But Steve, I mean, it had a lot to do with your personality and the way to deal with these drivers too, right?
You can hear the spotters on the cup races, how they kind of try to soothe the driver down. And Chad Knauss was really good about that, to keep Jimmy calm down and everything. So, it's just something else you learn, something you can't learn off of a computer, but you learn it if you want to be good at it. Since we had strayed off the subject.
That kind of leads me into a question, Steve. Can I ask a question yet? Do you think that there's room for a crew chief to make contact with a driver during the race, like professional sports racing is, or do you feel like that's probably unnecessary in dirt track racing?
Yeah, it's necessary. For nothing else, you can assist the driver in doing things like passing cars and avoiding accidents, things like that. But all the dirt drivers are accustomed to doing it without, so I don't know if it would be any kind of advantage, really, because I don't know if a lot of the guys would convert to it.
And the reason why I asked this, Harley, and I'd like your perception on it too, is, last night we were watching that race, and Bob Pierce was talking to his son, and so it got me to thinking, has Bob Pierce talked to Bobby Pierce much while he's been driving? Because it seemed to be a connection there. Now, as far as I know, you're not really supposed to have contact between the crew and the driver during the race in a dirt race, but it just kind of opened the idea of maybe there was something behind that, that there has been some communication, and I don't really see anything wrong with it.
Well, and that's exactly it, Chris. The problem is, and I agree with you, I think that there that it's a great thing. You see how the communication that you referenced was Pierce. Bob was a great reference for Bobby. But the problem there is most of these sanctions will not allow it. And it's not that I have actually experienced, you know, a little bit of in-call radio back in the day. I think it's 05. I had a radio system, and I was running dirt track. Loved it. I absolutely loved it. And I only asked my crew chief to, you know, he would give me the input that I wanted. If a caution came out, I wanted to know who was behind me and what kind of distance I had on him. The problem is, and I love that, you know, and like you said, Bob could calm Bobby down just a little bit. But here's the problem. You know, most of the dirt tracks, they will not allow it no more. It is just something that is just, I don't know if it's just become exclusive to asphalt, but they do not allow it in dirt in almost any sanctions. I know World of Outlaw, Late Models, Lucas Oil, any of those guys, they don't allow it. It's just like having mirrors. They don't allow it in dirt track. It's just something that doesn't happen, but I think it's beneficial.
I do, too.
I can see where things that I wonder.
Yeah, go ahead, Steve.
That's the point, but at the same time, you're dealing with a father-son relationship where they can sit down anytime and discuss things at length and in detail that you just don't get in a situation where the driver and the crew chief are of families and work and everything. So there is an advantage to that, but on the other hand, like you said, it could be an advantage on dirt, but you know, will
but
they ever allow
it? Day and age to where they're claiming that traction control is controlled by an iPhone. So, I mean, really, what's the, you know, I mean, if technology's moved up that far ahead, and it seems to be that maybe some people, I'm not saying that they're doing it, but being in dirt tracks and all around that like I have, I've wondered at times if there was actual communication going on, because some of them, they have their earpiece or they have their cell phone. And if you're not controlling that, I mean, you think about how easy it is. You got a race receiver in one ear and your dad in the other, right?
I think that might happen sometimes. I think it might. I mean, technology is so far that, I mean, you know it could. I mean, in my opinion, it could.
Right.
Now, what do you
I mean,
now, what
it,
are you
just, that just seemed like an interesting subject. So it's probably off subject there, but that just kind of caught me off guard when I first started thinking about it.
No, I agree. Okay. I think it's something that might even happen in the future, but then again, you know, I mean, I guess they have a little bit of an issue with the fact that they have receivers on dirt, you know, and we got to have that in our ear for one. But then again, there's splitters. There's always splitters. You know, you can run a receiver and a radio at the same time.
Right. Exactly. And being that technology, you know, it used to be, I bet you a scanner or something like that was probably going to run you, you know, $700-$800, maybe $1,000. And they thought, well, you know, you need the race receiver, so don't go spending that money on that, because you've got to communicate with us first. But I think that as evolution, you know, happens, I mean, it's more than a theory. It's true. Evolution has happened in everything. Even sports, there comes a time where, you know, maybe this is something that could be beneficial, especially with you describing what was going on there. If I was a crew chief, I would be on the radio. You're asking a guy up in the tower that's got to talk to all the drivers and see everything, but the more eyes that are on that driver, the more safe he is. And I hate to make it a safety issue, but that's exactly what it is, and it could come down to that.
Yeah, I do agree with that.
It would definitely help the driver to be able to hear clear when he's doing a job, something like, you know, cut down on the hesitation factor and make it safer, like you said, because he would know whether he was clear or not.
Yeah. Yep.
Sorry, that was my kid saying that the cat was mean.
Cats are always there. There's something else I want to touch on with you, Harley. You and your wife, Tammy, are seriously involved in autism awareness. What got you started on that path?
Well, we actually endorse three different type societies. You got the autism awareness. We do the spinal muscular atrophy, and we also do the cystic fibrosis. A big part of why we support that and how we support that is it kind of all begins with my nephew. I actually have a nephew who has cystic fibrosis. So within my own family, we're touched by it a little. And we, you know, when you're touched by it within your personal family, you want to make sure that you reach out and do the best you can, the most you can, to help out as much as you can when you have a platform like a race car. And I try to use that in a good way. We do have fundraisers. We don't take a dime in. Nothing goes to us. We have fundraisers. We raise money for societies. This past April, we were able to raise $3,600. My wife also is actually, she's a special ed teacher, so she works with autistic kids a lot. So we're touched by it within her family, and then we have, we also have the actual work that she does on a daily basis as an occupational therapist, and she works with them. So, you know, we see it every day. We work with it constantly. But, you know, it's kind of one of these things where if you can take a picture and you can sign a picture as a race driver, hand it out to a little kid and get a smile out of their face, the best thing in this entire world. And you know what I mean, Steve. You know, you, Chris, you know what I mean by a driver just doing such a little thing. And that's awesome. But when you can take your platform, and we've been blessed enough, all three of us, you know, we have, to be able to do something with what we got, whether it be y'all's radio show with the car. That's what I wanted to do. I wanted to take it and just take it to another level. And we just put the stickers on there, and man, we just reach out there, and we have one race per year where we just really raise money. And the fans, dirt racing fans and asphalt, dirt, whatever, race fans, are the best in the entire world. I don't care what nobody says. When it comes to something like that, and it's all about the kids, oh man, they just get, and you know they pull their hearts out just like it was doing something for their favorite driver, and that's kind of where it all started, man. That's what we do.
I know a lot of people that want to help Harley. Give us some examples of the fundraisers and all that you have, because that seems to be the holdup with a lot of people. They want to help, but they don't know how to help.
Well, I have not taken anything by way of the internet much. A lot of what we do is just once every April, we just decide to have the autism awareness race. We gather up a lot of doors and a lot of quarter panels. This past April, we got a Jimmy Owens door. We got a Jonathan Davenport door. We got some big names, big guys come in, and that was crazy. We reached out to some of them, and they were like, "Absolutely, you know, we'll get you some stuff."
Yeah.
And you know, it was great. We haven't really reached out with any kind of internet basis where people that's far off could help. I've had people, we did open up the auction this past year for those items, the quarter panels, the doors and stuff like that. We opened that up through Messenger kind of, or Facebook Messenger, where people could just message my wife. And if they wanted in on it, just tell her how much you wanted in on that door for. And, right. they would message her directly and she would put them down, you know, and if you want it, we'd find a way to get it to you. You know, it's not been, you know, per se internet wide or worldwide or US wide, but we have kind of expanded a little. And you know, basically for the most part, I tell anybody if they want to help and they can get a hold of us, message Tammy, message me, look us up on Facebook, and we will find a way. You know, whatever it takes, 100%. Of every bit of this. I mean, no matter, money comes out of mine and Tammy's pocket to do this. And, but that's just our donation, you know, that's our point of putting into it. And, it makes things you know, it makes things great. It's just rewarding. That's what we're doing for.
That's beautiful that you said that. It's rewarding. And I think that a lot of people, like I said, they just don't have – they don't realize the platform that they have before them because they don't know how to utilize it to make a difference in the world. And it's really a lot of people that I've talked to over the years that say, man, you know, I just want to be involved with something. I want to – you know, and you got to convince these guys to step out because I guess just like you guys, y'all just figured out how to do it because it was in your heart, right?
Yeah, you know, I contributed the majority of it to my wife. I've been racing for years, and she, you know, she just decided that this is something she wanted to try and do, and it meant a lot to her. It meant a lot to me, and she really took hold of the reins of it. That's pretty much 100% on her. I mean, if you look her up on Facebook, you're going to find around that time of year, you know, that's what she's doing. Here just last week, she was actually contacted by the Special Olympics team, which we really have nothing to do with. We did not, you know, we supported it 100%, but it was something different that we didn't come up with. But they knew that she'd done such a good job on her autism races. They contacted her and asked her to head up the Special Olympics race, which we raised $1,760-something last week at the same track for the Special Olympics event that they had. And, again, you know, it's just something that Tammy's taken on, and she's just really done a good job with it. It's something she, you know, put her heart into and has knocked it out.
Yes, she has, and definitely big props to both you and Tammy for the work y'all do for that. That's really big. I know it takes a lot of time, and like you said, you do it out of your pocket, so you sacrifice a lot. And I'm impressed, brother. Keep it up.
Oh, yeah, man. Hey, we really appreciate it. Like I said, all of it, all of it's about the kids, man.
That's it. That's right.
While we got a second, go ahead and give a shout-out to anybody you want to, anybody you want to recognize or just want to say hey to.
Oh, definitely. Man, I want to thank, you know, real quick, like a racer will do, I want to thank all my sponsors, Blue Heron Seafood Restaurant and Sushi Bar right there in Clemson, South Carolina. My boy Tim Chastain, he does a great job with his restaurant down there and supports me. I want to thank Wendell's Dipping Branch, a little small bar over in Anderson, South Carolina. They just a great place to go out, family atmosphere. Good place to go get in some line dancing. I want to thank BP Stay Wet, my boy Dane Miller. A lot of people beginning to learn Dane Miller's name around the dirt tracks worldwide. I think he's in Indiana right now working a dirt track out there. I think it was at Bloomington last with BP Stay Wet and conditioning tracks all over the country. And he's been helping me out. I want to thank CNC Customs. A little company in Elberton, Georgia. They helped me out as the custom truck accessories and window tinting. I want to thank Schaefer Oil with Tanner Brady, Schaefer Oil. They've been helping me out a lot and keeping me supplied with oil for the race motors. And Forever Tanning Boutique, a guy right there in Toccoa, Georgia, good friend of mine, helps me out. All your tanning needs or whatever, he's got it right there. And, you know, that's about it. I want to thank my H3 chicks. If you followed me on Facebook, you know all about the H3 chicks. That's my wife and all the girls that support me. They you know, they come out in full force and appreciate everything they do for me. But, Steve, that's about it, man.
Awesome. Right, quick, tell everybody social media, how they can keep up with you, follow what you're doing.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You can reach out on Facebook, hit me up, send me a friend request. I'm on Twitter as well, Harley Holden. H3 Harley is my username on Twitter, so you can hit me up there. Or at H3 Harley. Yeah, you can hit me on Facebook or Tammy as well. And, you know, you'll be able to follow along with pretty much everything we got going on right there on Facebook or Twitter as well.
got my you're in my group, NASCAR and other racing, so keep me informed.
That's right.
If you do any special events like the Special Olympics race or the autism race or stuff like that, let me know what's going on and we'll help you get the word out on that.
And
yeah,
that's my feed. On the group channel. Live feed. That's what it's all about these days, ain't it, Steve?
That's right.
Glad to have you on here, Harley. It's great hearing from you, too.
Hey, man. Good to see you, Chris. Take care of yourself.
Yes,
keep them boys down south straight. And, go
they
Tigers.
They ready to get rowdy. It's almost getting cold outside. For some reason, when it starts getting this about this time, they get ready to get rowdy.
It is working towards that time, brother.
That's it, baby. And we'll be home soon.
There you go.
All right, Harley. We'll keep up with you, bud. We'll try to get you back on later on in the year, see how things are going then. And really impressed with what you've gone through the past few weeks to go from totally crash to victory lane. That's pretty cool, dude. Be in touch. We'll see you later.
Keep digging.
All right, folks. Young gentleman, Harley Holden. And he's a very exceptional person. And his wife, Tammy, do a lot. So keep your eye on them. Follow them on Facebook or the various social media outlets. And now let's go ahead and get our next driver in here and get to talking to him some. I got a couple of things I want to talk to about him. Mr. Steven Shibester, how you doing tonight, Steven?
Pretty good. How are you guys?
How bad did I butcher your last name that time?
Shibester, it gets butchered all the time, man. It's a normal deal, but you got it right, so you're good to go.
Good job, crew chief. Good job.
Us rednecks can speak a little English.
That's all there is down here in Oklahoma, so.
Atta boy.
He's spitting right
in. We got one or two over on this end, too. I tell you something I wanted to touch on. Tell us about your new endeavor job-wise. I saw where you were looking for a career change there.
I've been welding for probably roughly about 8 years. Went to school for it. Did about everything you can't do in school and then got out in the job world and went through a lot of custom TIG welding jobs, aluminum, stainless, steel. I did a lot of custom work for trailers and some other guys. Went to the oil field for a little while and went to the oil field for about 5 years. And it worked out pretty good. It was a crew lead for a big company down here called Chesapeake. And then the oil field got slow, and they had to shut the shop down, and just haven't been finding anything around here. The oil field's so slow. Nothing pays very good.
Yeah. Well, the thing is, if you were closer to Charlotte, North Carolina, where the Cup teams are based, with your experience and your knowledge in welding, you can go to work for any Winston Cup team. The whole time I was at Hendrick Motorsports, we were always looking for quality welders. You always look for that. And I'm telling you, welders are in demand if you want to make the move. I mean, I can't guarantee you, but I promise you, you won't have any trouble getting a job there.
Steve, you're so right. Even around here, to find a good welder is hard. I mean, it's basically, if you know the guy, he's got all the customers in the world because it's kind of almost a lost art, and it's amazing that this country was built on steel and we're having trouble finding good welders.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the thing about welding for a cup racer. Not only have you got to make a good, solid weld, but by golly, it's got to be pretty, too.
Right.
And I'm sure you can do all that, Steve, in your sleep.
Yeah, TIG welding is my passion. It's a lot of fun, man, and I have a lot of fun doing a lot of custom work. I was actually doing custom work last night in the shop, and you know, that's my passion for it. But, you know, the last 5 years have been all that oil field stuff where it's a lot of big, heavy equipment, and it's it got a little tedious, you know, a little every day this and every day that. But I would love to do the race car part of it. But around here, there's not very much. I mean, you got Sawyer chassis and Factory One chassis in Tulsa, Oklahoma. But, you know, they're already packed up. And then other than that, it's just a bunch of oil field welders around here.
I heard that. That was one thing I remember about being at Hendrick Motorsports. Guys would come in and say they could weld, and Harry would ask them, well, can you TIG weld? And they go, oh, yeah. So Harry would take them over to the table, put two razor blades down on that table and go, weld those two edges together for me. Buddy, if you could weld, you could weld, you know, dealing with that thin metal, how tough it is to weld it together. And if you could do it, you pretty much had your foot in the door right there.
Yeah, in school, man, we had on the last couple phases that we did, we had some competitions, welding razor blades and welding pop cans together out of aluminum. You
oh,
weld
wow.
the bottom to the top, so we had a lot of
only American aluminum. You couldn't do that with any cheap stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They'd bring in the thinnest they could find. Just to make it interesting. But, yeah,
that's
it was a lot of fun. And we learned a lot of stuff back in school. And when I got out of school, I did all TIG welding and aluminum and stainless for about 3 years. And it was a lot of fun, but around here, there's just not no demand for it.
And not like it is here in the Charlotte area. And for you people listening, keep that in mind. If you don't, you know, if you're getting out of high school and you want to get into racing, but you don't want to go learn to be an engineer or aerospace or something like that, go to school and learn to weld. And you can get a job on a cup team if you can weld good. And believe what I'm telling you. Steven, how's your season been going so far?
The season's been actually, it's had its ups and downs, but right now, as of the last couple of months, it's been going really well. You know, we had a weekend 2-3 weeks ago where it was one of the weekends that you just dread. I mean, it was horrible. You know, we went Thursday
oh, wow.
night out to Creek County and went to race the outlaw car, and it had a cylinder down on it, so we ended up not being able to run the main. And I worked on that thing from, you know, hot laps on, wondering why it was not turning no RPM, and finally figured out after the heat race that it had a cylinder down on it, and ended up having to call it quits. And then came back here, took Friday night off, and went to I-44 Speedway in Oklahoma City, and went out there, ran two classes, ran our midget and a micro non-wing car for a guy. What started 18th in the non-wing micro, got up to third, and was passing for second, and the motor went out in that.
Wow.
Swung a rod. And then went out for the midget deal, started pole in it, led 20 laps, and then the right rear mud cover came off when I hit a hole and packed the wheel full of mud, and it started vibrating so bad I couldn't even see straight, so I had to pull off in that. So
rattled out of your teeth, huh?
Yeah, I felt like you're in a basketball. So yeah, it was one of them weeks, but you know, we came out, you know, last weekend, went to Greenville, Texas with the non-wing micro that we've been driving for a guy, and we started fourth and ended up winning and running away with it about half track, and ended up coming back with a win. You know, we won two races, actually three races before that weekend that we had all the problems. So We've been on a streak. We just got a little bad luck in between.
Yeah, but...
And you're running the sprint cars, right?
Yeah, the micro sprints and the midgets mainly right now.
Tell us about the difference between the micros and the midgets. Is that the one, the midgets are without the wing, right?
Yes, the midgets are like what you see at the Chili Bowl every year.
Right.
A lot of people pay attention to the Chili Bowl. The micros, man, they're a lot of fun. You know, there's gotten a lot of four-bar cars where it's kind of like a shrunk-down sprint car. There's so many different types of micros. I mean, there's...
Right, 600s.
There's... Yeah, the micro chassis deal is crazy, the amount. You know, you got Hyper Chassis in Pennsylvania. Concept Chassis is what I run, mostly. They're out of Indiana. You got Sawyer Chassis in Tulsa. D1 Chassis in California. CS9 Chassis in California. I mean, there's makes from everywhere. So, depending on what you drive is a whole different feel. But the Concept Chassis kind of handle like a midget, I would say, mainly. But the power to ratio deal, man, the midget is just awesome.
Right. Yeah, they put on great shows.
When you go to, you know, that 400 power, you know, 400 horsepower engine with, you know, only 1,200, you know, pounds, you're flying, man. It's just, you know, lifting the wheels up off the ground down the straightaways and getting that forward bite, and it's awesome.
Literally a rocket ship, right?
It is a rocket ship, man. And I'm a non-wing driver, probably. You know, that's my most fun as far as driving non-wing. And midgets, they're black.
The midgets, they're black.
Do you ever make it over to the Chili Bowl?
Yeah, we actually, last year was our second year for the Chili Bowl. We bought a car in October of last year and then took it up there to the Chili Bowl. That was actually our second race with it. Should have took it up there, really, but...
Tell us about it. Come on, this is the story. You just opened the door, man. You got to tell us about this.
Well, you know, we bought it in October last year. Got it a week before we wanted to race. Went down to Boyd, Texas with it. Ended up winning with a 40-car field. And, you know, we were like, hell yeah, you know, you get this,
building
get this car. And, yeah, we win with it.
Chili Bowl, here we come.
Yeah. So we went to the Chili Bowl. You know, it's good equipment, but, you know, when you go there, you got the best of the best. And,
right.
And, you know, they got all the time in the world to work with them cars, and we didn't, you know. We went there. We had some trouble with the setup. We were okay in our qualifying night, but we went out in our qualifier. We went to a heat race, ran pretty good. Went to our qualifier, and an oil filter backed off and blew the oil filter ring out. So it blew oil everywhere. So at that time, we were thinking, man, we hurt. You know, all my crew, they were thinking we blew a motor up. I told them, I said, it never pulled down. I don't think it's the motor. So we pulled the hood off, and sure enough, it was that oil filter. So we put the oil filter in, drained the oil, put oil back in it, went out, had to run the D. Started on the back of the D, and we missed the transfer by two, but it was all right.
I mean, so you really weren't. I mean, you really weren't in a bad position until you had an oil ring blow, huh?
Yeah, if you know, we would have, you know, held in that qualifier, and we probably could have been in a you know, that night, say Maine or, you know, something like that, and that would have got us into the A or the B or the C. I mean, it would have helped us out tremendously.
Wow, man. I mean, something like that. I was expecting, Steve, I'm not gonna lie to you, when it opened up like that, I was expecting the world's worst, you know. Maybe. But I guess that'll be a story for somebody else to tell. Man, I mean that's pretty good though to go up there and I bet it was a lot of fun. And you said you've gone twice now.
Yeah, you know, we've done the shootout. It's with the micros. We've done that we're probably going on 8 years, 10 years, and we've actually won that race. And that is a pain, man. That race is a hectic deal. I mean, you're going 4 days, you know, midnight to waking up at 6 o'clock in the morning and back at it again. The Chili Bowl deal is so more relaxing. You know, you got your certain night that you qualify, and that's the only night that you got a race besides, you know, Saturday. And then it's a lot more relaxing. You get to relax and watch some racing on, you know, the days that you don't qualify, like Wednesday and Thursday and Friday. You get to relax for a little while. And the shootout deal, you don't relax at all. You know, you're running four classes, and then you got to go. You're up there, like, you know, three times a night racing.
Right. I've never been to the Chili Bowl, so I guess I've kind of been lost on exactly how they do things. But the way you just explained it, it kind of gives everybody a reason to go to the race, because if you get that chill time, it kind of keeps you a fan and you get to play.
Yes. The Chili Bowl, I mean, the shootout deal is hectic. If you're a driver, all you got to concentrate on is driving. The Chili Bowl deal, you practice Tuesday, you go out twice, which is not that bad. I mean, you still got a little time to breathe and stuff like that.
Right.
And then you got a choice between Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday, and one of them nights are going to be your qualifying night. So them other two nights, you're a spectator and a fan, where you get to relax, chill out with the all the people that you haven't seen and, you know, in the off season and stuff like that.
It does. Racing is a lot of work. You're from this side of it. You know, I mean, that chill time is probably a major factor into making that an every year event, right?
Yes. Yeah, the Chili Bowl deal, I want to go to it every
chance.
You
get the chill at the Chili Bowl. I wonder how many people knew this. Yeah.
That'll be a T-shirt to sell.
Yeah, there you go. I'm going to be up there this year at the Chili Bowl selling that T-shirt. Steve, you coming with me?
Yeah.
Get the chill at the Chili Bowl.
Chili Bowl's on my bucket list. I'd love to go there.
If you guys love open-wheel dirt track, man, that's Chili Bowl is the place to go. I'm telling you.
I think if it's a dirt arena, I start getting excited because we know what we can do with it.
It's pretty little,
you,
man.
And I've thought about this. You know, I think we discussed this last week or a couple of weeks, Steve, what's going on at the Gateway is completely huge, okay? It's like Donald Trump, it's going to be big, okay? And that wasn't a good Trump one. I'm sorry, y'all. But anyway, it's going to be huge, and it is. And what it's going to open the door to, I think, I sent Jerry Jones a thing the other day. He was on Colin Cowherd, and I was like, bring dirt track racing to Texas Stadium. Because he's sitting there saying, I built this stadium for the attraction. So let's make it more attractive and build a dirt racing rink in the middle of that football field and have some fun with some dirt boys, because that's what they're doing at the Gateway. And, you know, small town racing is being affected by big time money, okay? And a lot of racetracks, it's hard to make any money to bring in Lucas Oil or something like that, because I mean, there's a certain amount of money that has to go to them regardless if you race or not. And if they go to these big time venues and these, you know, capital cities that can run these kind of races, then that style of racing gets bigger and we get to grow the farm system a little bit more. You guys following me on this?
Yep. They did that Indiana inaugural race. Was that? It was in a baseball field or something like that. Did you guys see it?
Right. Yeah, up at the football field right in Indianapolis.
Yeah.
It was the same weekend as PRI, wasn't it?
Yeah. It was the fans' choice. All the fans, you know, you had a couple of fans' choice drivers and all the big names in the midgets. got to come to that. And they drew quite a bit of a crowd.
Yes.
That would be the kind of deal like if they did that at Texas Stadium.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and what it does with this Chili Bowl is it gives you the opportunity to race year-round. And with these open-air stadiums, the retractable roofs and stuff, what they're doing at the Gateway could really open the door for that. And as a sprint car driver, I mean, you know, if you had to drive, you know, 150 miles, are you going to go to the Gateway? Are you going to go attend that?
I didn't even know anything about it.
Wow. It's a dirt race inside the arena, inside the dome where the St. Louis Rams played. It's in December. It's late models and modifieds. They've got 150 late models and 250 modifieds, and the field is already – the entry fees are already paid. And so they've got a list of people. If you don't make it and you're up on the top of the list, then they bring somebody else in. I mean, there's that many cars signed up to race in St. Louis in December. Really big event.
Dang.
Sounds like it. Steven, you obviously had some success with your equipment, but I understand you've got one of your cars for sale. Tell us about that.
The sponsor that I got, the Melmark Pipe and Supply guy, he's we had a teammate, and he decided to, you know, he's had to go to school, college, and having to work to stay in school, so we ended up having to, he got out of racing, and now we got this one car here that we can't do anything with. I can't drive all of them, so
yeah.
We're just trying to sell it. You know, it's a good piece. It was always a top five car, and we just need to get it gone. It's just sitting here waiting on somebody to come pick it up.
Well, maybe somebody.
Tell us about the series and stuff that you run.
I run, there's a deal called Now 600. I run that, and I'm actually leading the points in all three series in that. They got a Sooner series, a National series, and a North Texas series, and I'm leading points in all three series. And then in the midget deal, I run with the Power Eye West mostly. And I'm actually leading the points in that, too.
Well, having a stellar year, then.
Yeah, we're
That's
doing pretty good.
Onions.
Doing pretty good.
Steve,
Go ahead.
I know you got a good question, Steve, because this is – see, Steve's from the asphalt side. I'm from the dirt side, and Steve's always really interested in how the car reacts. And so being a crew chief, you can only imagine how his mind works there. Steve, I know you got something good for him.
You're on dirt, so I'm always fascinated by this. You know, you're sideways through the corner, but how do you tell if you're loose? I mean, and what do you do when you feel the car loose like that? What do you do to try to fix it?
It's all about... I mean, I know how the asphalt deal is. It's got to translate into dirt. So it's all about reading the track. If you can read the track, you can fix a loose car. And with a loose car, you know, you pick up the throttle, the tires are not going underneath you, then you got to figure something out.
Right.
So
because any other way loose is fast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
To say, like,
it's that perfect
you're on the
recipe.
Top side. So you're on the top side, and car's loose. What I'm going to do to try to fix it is if there's a little more moisture up on the top, I'm going to try to keep that right rear up on the moisture on the cushion further away around before I have to get off of it. So that keeps the
one more time.
Bigger. Say, like, if you're
I mean,
on top
you described that so well. I mean, what he's talking about, guys, is he's talking about the looseness up there. It's solid. It's going to get you going. And you actually have a special place in that little wetness that you want to go through. Kenny explained some of this last night on the on the truck race. And so I think you're right on the money with what you're saying there.
Yeah. Yeah, you want to. Yeah. If you're loose, you want to stay up in the top side moisture with your right rear tire as much as possible before you had to come off of it to go down the straightaway. You got to have that point just right so you don't hit the wall either.
Right, and with such a short steering wheel base, I mean, that's got to be a loose race car is typically what turns you guys over, right?
Yeah. I'm always the guy that loves the car just a hair bit tight. And because I would rather have a car a hair bit tight and be able to drive it harder to try to loosen it up to be to my advantage. But if the car is loose, you're going to have to work with it even harder than if the car is tight, is what I think. Car's loose, you're going to have to pay attention to the track. You're going to have to keep your tires underneath you. Try to find the moisture. If it's on the bottom, you're going to have to, keep on the bottom and come out as straight as possible. Stay on that bottom edge, not ever get out in the black slick, and keep the tires underneath you.
Is this when you're talking about around the bottom, is this when you're kind of running like a diamond shape where you're headed towards the wall? Tell us about that.
Well, like if you run the bottom, say you're running around the tires.
Uh-huh.
You want to keep the car rotated enough where you get into the entry, and then when you get to the apex, you're able to have the car slowed down enough where you can come out right on the tires and stay with that left rear in the moisture. You always got to have a tire in the moisture. If you don't have a tire in the moisture, you ain't going nowhere.
Right.
If you diamond it off, say like you run the top going in, you got to have that car rotated enough to come across and use that momentum of the banking to get down to the bottom, hit the moisture on the bottom, and then come off the corner.
So you're diamonding it on the top, and you're kind of you're as they say, you're catfishing it on the bottom.
Yeah.
You get that, Steve? Can you? I know you can visualize that. Jason's going to have a field day with what he learned today. I promise you, the producer learned something today.
Well, absolutely, I'm too. And the big thing that the more and more I learn about dirt, the more it impresses me. If you got a handling problem on dirt, the driver can fix it. He can find another line, or he can hunt some more moisture, or whatever, and fix that problem on the track. Where on asphalt,
it's
got a handling problem. Hell, we're going to empty the trailer, changing everything on the car to fix that problem. You end up changing springs and shocks and sway bars and stuff, and the dirt guys are like, "Well, I'll just run a different line."
You make it sound easy, almost, Steve, and I think it's harder.
Not easy, but it definitely gives you the idea of the difference between dirt and asphalt racing. I mean, it's a world of difference. A lot
it is,
more than
and
I
you can have a guy dive to that bottom, and you're like, there's no way in the world he's rolling that top. I mean, he's hitting the cushion, baby. He's gone. Next thing you know, there's somebody on the bottom, and he's steadily creeping in. And so then you got that guy up on the top looking down on the bottom guy like, oh, you're not going to take my line. And guess what? Somewhere about right around turn four, he slides up there, and the rest is history.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See, that's something else I picked tonight. y'all diamond the corner, you go from the top to the bottom to the top, and when we diamond the corner, you go from the bottom to the top to the bottom. It's the exact opposite.
Beautiful.
I mean, you got your stagger, your rebounds, your wing position, stuff like that. It's like in the 600s, we don't run no cockpit adjustments. So if you have an ill-handling car, it's up to the driver. Once you're out there, it's up to the driver to figure out how to work it.
So do you want to drive late model? I guess that's the question for me, and I'll be done, Steve.
Do what?
Do you want to drive super late models?
If the opportunity came up, yeah, I'd go for it. I'd drive anything.
I like that. I like that attitude. Steve, that's what I'm talking about. That was a belly laugh.
Yeah. That's a driver all the way there. Just it don't matter what it is.
He deserves a trophy for being a bad.
If it's got four wheels and some horsepower behind it, I'll go for it.
That's right. That's what we're talking
about. I heard that. Steven, give a shout-out to anybody you want to recognize or say hello to, sponsors, crew, family, friends, shop dog, whoever.
I would like to thank my sponsors, Melmark Pipe and Supply, Mustang Oklahoma, Guardian Tubular, Metric Cycles Racing Engines out of Tulsa, Boyd's Racing Engines out of Norman, Kaiser Wheels, Infinity Shocks. Let's see here. I'd like to thank my dad, my mom, my girlfriend. They all put in, you know, a lot of hard work, and it always pays off.
Definitely sounds
awesome.
Like a family affair.
Yeah, what's the dog's name? What's the shop dog's name?
I don't have a shop dog, unfortunately.
You got a shop cat?
I used to. It ran away.
It did, gummit. We got to get this man an animal over there to hang out with him.
Well, there's another difference between dirt and asphalt, too. Asphalt guy wouldn't have a shop cat. That ain't happening.
Well, they're just called something else, Steve. I'm sorry.
Hey, he keeps the mic away.
Oh, it's always fun having you guys on, and I love being on this show, man. And it's been great talking to you, Mr. Sylvester.
Thank you. It's been great talking to you guys.
Let everybody know how they can follow you on social media.
I got my personal page on Facebook, Steven Sylvester. You can send me a friend request on that or whatever. I have about 10 a week or 12 a week. I go through them all and make sure they ain't crazy and then add them. And then I got my Sylvester Racing page on Facebook too, which it's a, you know, family oriented. It's got my brother on there and what my brother and me do together on the racing and where we travel and updates and all that. And that's about it, man. I'm on Instagram too. Steven Sylvester.
Cool.
I'll be sending you a friend request. Heck yeah.
Yeah,
good to
definitely.
Talk to you.
You're also in my group, NASCAR and Other Racing, and you post a lot of stuff there, so that's how I end up keeping up with you. And we'll definitely keep up with you as the year goes on and try to get you back later on. Do appreciate you coming on and talking with us tonight. Really enjoyed the information. I have to figure out what I've got written down over here because I was trying to write this stuff down so I could remember it. But I appreciate you taking the time to explain that and everything, and really glad to have you on, Steven.
Oh, no problem. I'm just going to have to see you guys at the Chili Bowl in January. Better come.
Hey, we got to go. We got to.
Telling you.
I guarantee you guys will have a blast.
Oh, just being around Steve would be a blast. I mean, this guy is a character, is he not?
Yeah.
Well, much like a rock and roll band, I'm a lot better in person than I am on tape delay. So we need to
I promise you, Steve, when you come up with a frog in a blender, and let me tell you something, Steven, you don't want to be a frog in a blender because that's going to be a term that I remember for the rest of my life. Can you explain to me what a frog in a blender is?
We'll just say it's a hot seat.
Yes, when you Maytag it and you're facing oncoming traffic there. Is that not a good analogy, Steven?
Absolutely.
I don't know, man.
I think that describes it best.
Oh man, what a night.
Steven Shebester. We really appreciate you coming on, bud, and we'll be in touch.
All right, man. I'll see you guys.
All right. Good to talk to you.
And one more time, the man behind the curtain, Mr. CJ Sports, has got a little something he wants to talk about, so we're going to turn the room over to him. Tell us about it, CJ.
First of all, I hello the show, you guys. I have me rolling over here. Enjoyed everything I got to hear, the frog and the blender and everything. Enjoyed myself. It's kind of a question slash kind of a shout-out as well. I got a shout-out to Tony Stewart and what he put on at Eldora, what he has made Eldora be to the racing fans. And what I want to shout out is this man has an opportunity on a Wednesday night, no competition, nothing out there, and could really milk making a lot of money off this opportunity. And you know, there was a post going around showing the prices of the items at the concession stand.
Oh, yeah.
It really impressed me because, like I said, there's no competition Wednesday night. This man could charge as much as he wanted for anything out there, and the fans would have no choices. There's nothing else to do on Wednesday night. And my question to you guys is, at what point does NASCAR take a page out of Tony Stewart's book and help themselves bring fans back to the track? You know, when I went to Charlotte, with a 12-ounce aluminum can, $7. I charged $1.29 where I work at, where they charged at the Charlotte Motor Speedway, $7. And, you know, I saw the prices on the beers. It was like $2 a beer at Eldora, $10 for a 6-pack, $20 for a 12-pack. That's a hell of a price for a racetrack. My question to you guys is, how great is what Tony Stewart does and how he's making it affordable for fans, but also at what point does NASCAR take a page out of this book to help bring the fans back?
I don't think it's NASCAR. And what it is they've limited so much on how tracks can make money, man. And that's kind of the deal. This is a small-town track that's going to sell out. But what these tracks are having to pay for at big-time venues is a lot of empty space and lights that all are always on with never an event. Does that make sense?
I saw a post today from Miss Lee, who helps this show tremendously, too. And she said at tracks like Charlotte, they don't have any control over the concession. The concession deal is signed out to a private company, and this private company price. And Charlotte Motor Speedway gets a percentage of, you know, whatever they rake in. I never knew that. But it's a weird deal, but you're exactly right. The bottom line is it's just getting way too expensive to go to a race for the average family. There was another post I saw, coincidence, just the day before, where the Quality Suites in Bristol, Tennessee was charging
$7. Oh, gosh. Tell them, Steve.
And $99 for one night with a four-night minimum. That's almost $3,000 just for four nights in a motel. If I'm going to spend $3,000 on four nights, it ain't going to be Tom Baudette leaving the light on for me.
Somebody's
pampering me the whole time I'm there.
The one I've seen, I think, was $700, for and that was a night, and for a minimum of three or four nights, I can't remember. But, I mean, that's Steve, that's outrageous.
It even shows some of the other ones that it was the common practice to charge $300 to $400 a night with a four-night minimum. So you pay $7 for a beer at the track, and you're paying that much for a night, plus you got to feed yourself and everything, and you take a family of four, the average blue-collar guy, the average race fan, he's going to be able to pull out that much.
We can't eat at the track. That's what it comes down to, Steve.
Happens.
We can't eat at the track, and we bring our ham sandwiches. My wife and I, we'll go up there to the truck stop. When we go to Talladega, we'll go to the truck stop that morning. We'll get showers, and then we'll stop at the little they're not sponsors of the show, but Subway, and we'll get it. You know, we'll take our food into the Speedway there, because I mean, literally, you know, you're buying a whole nother race ticket. I mean, if I was going to do that, I'd sit up in the tower seats, you know.
Yeah, I agree. And I don't want to take anything away from what Tony Stewart's doing. That needs the whole pricing thing and the concessions is kind of icing on the cake to what he has got going on.
Being
in the military, you know, I've witnessed, you know, they always go with the cheapest bidder. And, you know, NASCAR has got to find a way to work better and find, make this a competitively, you know, open market, not you know, we know NASCAR is quick to, you know, You got Sunoco is the only fuel in NASCAR, and Goodyear is the only tire. You need to open this up for an opportunity to find bidders. And with the opportunity of these companies having the kind of traffic that they have at these tracks, there's got to be companies out there that can do what the concessions at a much cheaper price to make this affordable. And NASCAR's got to understand the cheaper that they make these concessions, the more money is going to be spent, period, because now more souvenirs can be bought and more programs can be bought and more of this can be bought and better tickets can be purchased and higher ticket price. You know, people will be willing to get those tower tickets instead of the cheap tickets because now they know they're not going to have to spend $100 to eat out there. They can spend $20 and get, you know, the same product. So NASCAR's really got to look into finding a way to make it, you know, a lot cheaper, even if it's, you know,
well, I think
cheaper concessions.
What we're missing here, Jason, is the availability. And I didn't mean to cut you off, but I mean, the only thing that I can beg to differ in this story is Talladega gives you free camping. They give you a chance to bring your cooler through. They give you a chance to buy your tickets early and get it at a discounted price. And the problem is, the tracks are not selling out. But you got a truck series race that how many seats does Eldora sit? How many seats can they sit, Steve? Do you know? Can we get a fact check on that? Anyway, the fact of it is, you know, they were sold out, and there were cars for miles to see. So we can't even see that many people turn out to a truck race at Talladega. And there's something wrong there, and it needs to be fixed. Jason, you're right on the money.
Yeah, they got there. I'm trying to pull up to see what the capacity is. Real quick before we jumped off here, just to give you that fact. But Eldora capacity 17,905 is the number that jumps out in front
and
of my face.
I guarantee you there was 30,000 people there. Guaranteed.
Oh, I'm sure there was. I didn't see everything else. I just typed in capacity. I'm sure that Calvin Media and Calvin, you know, everybody in the infield and I'm sure they probably had standstill seats there, you know, opportunities out there. I'm sure there probably was more. You know, if Tony Stewart in a smaller avenue, in a smaller venue, is able to keep the prices where he keeps it, then NASCAR with this bigger venue and knowing that the traffic flows will be so much more, there's got to be a happy medium somewhere.
I agree, and NASCAR needs to get more into the smaller tracks again. Steve, go ahead.
The thing is, there, you know, Eldora, the race is put on by a racer. There's no track in Cup that a racer owns and operates. I mean, there's a world of difference there, and Tony Stewart is doing a hell of a job because he can look at things from the racer side or from the fan side because he's been there all his life. So he knows what it's like, and he's turned this show toward the fans. And it's really paying off, you know. Yeah, I saw that post about his food prices and everything, and I was just amazed. It was like when you see a nostalgia thing on Facebook where they're showing you the menu from McDonald's from like 1972. But I mean, you know, if you can get a hamburger for $3 at a racetrack, call me and let me know. That's the only place I've ever seen them that cheap and everything, so.
I believe Bowman Gray fits kind of the same standard. If I'm not mistaken, a hot dog is $2 at Bowman Gray Stadium. I mean, that's, you know, and these guys filling their stands up every weekend. So, I mean, to make money off of food isn't hard when you're filling the stands. But, it's that special recipe that somehow gets them all together. The comment about the truck race was there was 30,000 people probably there at Eldora. There is 100,000 people outside Talladega Motor Speedway during a truck race, but you're only going to find 7,000 or 8,000 that's actually in there watching the race. So if you can get 30,000 at a dirt track where they're going to leave with, you know, dirt stains on their clothes, they can never wear them again anywhere else in public except for another dirt track, you know, you're looking at there's something wrong here. And if it's that much interest into it, NASCAR, start looking at where you're selling your tickets at. And, you know, that's kind of where I stand with that.
Talk about Talladega. I'm sure there's a lot of people that the Talladega race is secondary to the show they put on right down the street. It's Talladega Short dirt track they got there. So, I mean,
definitely, Steve. What a lot of the drivers do is
yeah, and I promise you that place is sold out that week with the people down there because there's a lot of people that want to watch dirt track racing and they want to watch race in general at an affordable price.
250 cars, but in affordable, I don't know. Dirt track racing has gotten pretty expensive themselves. But I promise you there's 250 cars there and there's probably 15,000 people that's around that just the short track there, and it's a great place. If you guys ever get a chance, come down here and check that out too, because it's amazing.
Walking
through the dirt track.
I have one more comment I want to make, and then I'll let you guys get everything wrapped up. If y'all do go to the Chili Bowl and y'all do not swing by or swoop in with the helicopter and pick me up, I'm the one butt hurt person.
I tell you, the three of us ought to try to get some press credentials, and we ought to just make a road trip out of it.
I've got an RV, guys. I've got an RV, okay? It's an 84 Ford, but it is a good one, okay? I mean, you know, I got to swing through North Carolina to go anywhere, but, I mean, you know, maybe we can get that helicopter. I don't know. I'll have to look at our finances.
Yeah, that's what we need, the motorhome. We'd be like 10 cup going down the road to the U.S. Open.
I don't know. Jason sent me a picture of a Learjet not too long ago, and I tell you, I haven't forgotten about that one. First company purchase right here.
Yep. Oh,
all right. Well, let's get this show wrapped up. Jason, tell everybody how we can follow you on Facebook, what you got going on.
Yes, sir. You guys can check out the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network on Twitter at 110 Nation. You can check us out on Facebook, 110 Nation Sports. While the show was going on, I dropped probably about 10 to 12 press releases from all the great drivers that we have great relationships with. So make sure you guys check that out as well. Tomorrow night, right here on the 110 Nation Sports Radio Network, we have Hot Laps with Stats. He's got legend, late model, tour modified driver Kyle Elwood and Jim Williams joining us tomorrow night. So looking forward to that. And Monday night, the 110 Nation Sports Show will be back in full effect. We got everything worked out, everything ready to go. 8 o'clock, Monday through Wednesday. Make sure you guys check that out as well.
Good deal, Chris. All right. Let us know what you got going on, buddy.
Well, I tell you what, this is the biggest weekend for street stock racing. We should have started the show out with this, but come on down to Hattiesburg Speedway tomorrow night for that $2,000 to win. You can leave with $3,050 if you sweep the night. That's enough to buy you one of them crate motors that y'all be talking about so much. And once you run that 50 lapper, shoot on over to Why Not Motorsports Park, the House of Hook for Saturday night. We're going to be down there. It's another big street stock event, $1,000 to win. That's right. You can buy those $1,000 shocks you've been wanting to go in with that new crate motor if you sweep the weekend. So, guys, just make sure y'all are supporting your local dirt tracks. Look us up. All you got to do is type in Yellow Caution Flag, yellowcautionflag.com. And, man, you'll find everything that you need to know about Southeast Dirt Track Racing. We got it covered down here in Mississippi, and we're trying to cover it nationwide, baby. It's great to be on this show with Steve. He's my crew chief, and I say I'm the hot hand young driver there. What do you say about that, Steve? You're really driving this ship, but I guess sometimes we can be each other's crew chief there.
Yeah, kind of like Harry Hogan, Cole Trickle, you know.
That's right.
Well,
I'm teaching old man new tricks, and the old man's teaching the young man how to drive an asphalt.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I'm loving it. It's just two totally different worlds. And dirt racing is something I'm not familiar with, so I'm always learning, and that just keeps me going. I'm motivated. That's another thing that's on my bucket list. I want to work on a sprint car one night at a race just to be part of it one time.
I mean, we got to get you there, no doubt.
Yeah, it'll happen. You know, it's been on my bucket list for a long time, but then again, that's what the bucket list is for. You know, you don't want to knock it all out at once, then you got nothing to do for you.
I feel sorry for the fourth grader right now setting his bucket list up. He just wants a car.
Yeah. He's going to be 29 years old, stuck in a marriage. To look forward
can't,
to.
Can't use up my bucket list.
He's
always a hoot.
In front of the mirror shaving going, what the hell have I done to my life?
And if you've ever found yourself in a position where you're a frog in a blender, watch out, guys. It's not a good feeling.
Yeah. I can picture that. I think that's going to be my next tattoo.
Wait, before the blender or after the blender?
As it's happening.
That's a bad thing.
Being there like a
tattoo. Sorry, guys.
And devils.
That's right. You look like a Bloody Mary.
Yeah. All right, guys. I have really enjoyed it tonight. It's just been, what can I say? It's been a hell of a night, folks. You can't beat live radio. I tell you, it's the greatest thing in the world. And thank y'all for sticking around and tuning us in tonight. Thank you again, Stephen Shebester and Harley Holden, for coming on with us tonight. Folks, we'll be on next Thursday night, same time, same station. Come check us out. Good night.
Bye.